Hello, welcome to Misadventures, a Gloomhaven podcast brought to you by Game Republic Radio. This episode contains spoilers for scenario number one. Please enjoy responsibly. So there we were, first dungeon, first time this party's ever gotten together. We've got the brute unconscious in the corner. We've got the spellweaver lying in a pool of her own blood, looking like a pincushion full of arrows in the middle of the floor. And we still have another door to kick open. Things are already looking bad for the party poopers. How are they going to get through this scenario victorious? Welcome, everyone, to the very first episode of Misadventures. Thanks for joining us. Before we get back and solve the mystery of how we made it through, if we made it through at all, we should probably take a step back and introduce everyone. So why don't we start with you, Garrett, and just kind of make our way around, and we can introduce yourself, introduce your character, your hopes, your dreams, whatever you think's relevant.
All right. Well, I am Tanzanite Stonechest. I am a spellweaver, which is a pretty interesting class, I think, but we don't have to get into all that right now. I don't necessarily play it well, at least not at the beginning. My life goal is I'm trying to work for a cure. There's a village. They're all infected. I need to go out. I need to kill forest imps, and then I need to complete an adventure that follows that in order to complete kind of my adventurer's mission. Little side note about Tanzanite is she finds the concept of money just, it's strange to her. She has kind of, I don't know if you would call it OCD, but she won't pick money up off the ground. It's gross, it's dirty, and like, you know, I just killed an imp and he dropped money. Like, where was he holding that? They don't have pockets. So she doesn't pick up money at all, which in no way holds her character back.
Yeah, not frustrating for the rest of us at all.
So, Garrett, what about the Spellweaver got your attention, got your interest to pick that class?
Well, when I was first looking at it, you know, right off the top in my head, I've played enough RPGs, tabletop, otherwise, that your magic classes are kind of always going to be your glass cannons. Played well, they're going to be really powerful, they're going to dominate, and I was thinking I could jump right in and start dominating. That may not have been, you know, the case, but that was the thought process there. Also, the concept of being able to get all my cards back using my lost card recovery. I didn't appreciate early on that I would be losing more cards than an average player because of the way her deck is constructed. But that was kind of the initial decisions was, okay, I can be a glass cannon and I can get all my cards back.
Gotcha. Steve, what about you? What are you playing this campaign?
I was playing as the Quattrall Tinkerer. His name was Bronstanimo the Firm. And part of what appealed to me about that character was like it's built sort of as a support role. It's a lot of healing, status effects, things like that. And that kind of fits my playstyle.
All right. Anything else about Bronstanimo we should know?
What was your life?
Yeah, he's small, right? Like a little dude. Not quite as small as a Vermling, but pretty small. And he got picked on a lot in school. So to prove that he's not a wuss, his goal was to kill 20 elite creatures. It's about the least noble life goal you could get, I think.
Especially compared to Garrett's, his character's noble deeds for the betterment of the community.
Oh yeah, he's gonna like cure a whole plague for a village, and I'm just like I'm gonna beat guys up to show that I'm not a wuss.
Well, best of luck to you on that endeavor, sir. Skip, what about you?
Yeah. I'm playing a Vermling Mind Thief. His name is Skeevil the Shiv. And my whole reasoning behind it is I like to basically hide out in the shadows and jump in when I possibly can and pretty much steal anything that's laying around that, you know, I feel that belongs to me, which is pretty much anything on the ground.
You're talking about in game, right? Not real life.
Okay. So I feel like I've played him pretty well so far up to this date, but I like the way he turns out, and the way he was described to me up front, it was he's kind of like a, almost like a monkish that he hits for a lot more damage than you expect him to. And for the most part, if you play him well, I guess, and I'm not sure I have, but he can hit pretty good. For what he does, I think he hits pretty well. And I think I've helped out a little here and there, but definitely
plus
not like
the
tank.
Rats.
For what it's worth, man, I think you have played him very well, because he's a tricky class, because And I don't understand him well because I haven't played him, but it seems like you're always swapping like statuses up top. You've got kind of like held cards there. What is that all about?
Okay, so those are the augment cards with this class, and basically they modify various aspects of what he can do. And the one I like and was recommended up front was a plus two to his attack. So every melee attack I do, I get a plus two. So even the default attacks would be an attack for four. And then you find some, I think actually one of the X cards is an attack three. So it turns into an attack five that really can hurt most things at these early levels. And then that mixed in with, like you're saying, the rats that just, they work out. They distract. They throw poison at things that need it. And it worked out pretty well.
Awesome.
And
go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm sorry. My life goal, basically, oddly enough, is this whole Robin Hood kind of thing where I'm going to end up donating a whole lot of gold to the, what is that place? I forgot.
The Sanctuary of the Forgotten Tree. That, yeah.
That's how altruistic he is. It doesn't matter who they are.
Sanctuary of the Forgotten.
So, yeah, I'm just trying to collect all the gold and, you know, donate as often as I can.
All right. Another noble goal in pursuit there.
Rub it in.
My name is Casey. I'm playing the Brute, and his name is Etu. And I went with the Brute, so I was the one that purchased the game and convinced these guys to play with me. So I figured it would be nice if I kind of thanked them for that and were willing to invest all this time, go ahead and let those guys pick their classes first, and I would just kind of fill in whatever gap I perceived to be in the group. So I felt like we were missing. I kind of had my eyes on the Scoundrel, maybe, or maybe one of the tanks. It seemed like we needed a tank, so I went ahead and filled that role. And to me, so it's kind of between the Craghart and the Brute. The Brute seemed a little bit more straightforward, a little bit more traditional of a tank, whereas the Craghart had like these air of effect things. You had to worry about hitting friends. And I figure with us all trying to figure this game out together, it was going to be hard enough without having to worry about hurting my friends. So I went with the more traditional Brute. And honestly, he seemed like he'd be maybe a little bit boring going into it, but he just seemed the best pick. But as I've played him, he's a lot more mobile than I was expecting, and it is making him a ton of fun to play. His life goal is his ancestors fought demons back in the day, and he's heard tales of this. And now that he's discovering demons are true, he is set out to destroy them. And so he has to kill one of each kind of demon.
I mean, that's kind of the same as mine. It's a little ego driven.
I mean, there's like history and ancestry, I guess, backing it up.
I mean, yeah, but it's not like he's trying to kill all the demons. He's just like, I want to kill one of each, like a trophy room, you know?
Yes, this is fair.
You're basically Ash Ketchum. Like, no one's like, oh, you got to catch them all. I'm not impressed.
Except he's murdering them.
Yeah, you're a monster, actually.
Well, have you seen me? I'm this giant dude with like horns all over my body, and I'm, yeah, bring it on. Bring it
you're
on, demons.
Guy.
Bring it on. So anyway, that is introductions for the Party Poopers, which might sound like a ridiculous party name, but it's actually founded in lore because our first city event really, I feel like, just set the tone for this entire game. We found our city event had us finding a poor person in city getting beat up. And I believe it was of a person of the Spellweaver's race. Is that correct? An Orchid?
That is correct. Yeah, we were kindred folk.
So we thought, good folks that we are, you know, we're fresh in town. We need to make a good impression, a good name for ourselves. So we thought we would help this poor individual out. Don't beat this person up. What are they? They're just, what are they doing to you? Right? Like, take it easy on these guys. So apparently the city got pissed that we broke up that fight because they wanted to see blood in the streets. And so they were mad that that bloodshed did not occur and we lost reputation immediately.
But
thus
we did,
the Party Poopers.
We did gain really prosperity, though.
Yeah.
I mean, go figure that something's beneficial for the town isn't going to be popular with them.
This is true.
Now, was that one of the event cards that we should not have had? Because we kind of messed up there.
Yeah. And this is a good learning point. Hopefully others can learn from this. When you're setting up Gloomhaven for the first time, it's a lot to take in, and I may have screwed up on – I definitely screwed up on the event cards, and I shuffled them all together. Like, so all the city event cards that I own got shuffled in, and all the road event cards I own got shuffled in. You're only supposed to start with the first 30 of each, which is real pain in the butt when you realize you screwed up the session after and then have to go sort them all out because now they're all shuffled. But anyway, so that city event we probably shouldn't have gotten at that point in time. And the road event, which we'll get into momentarily, definitely should not have happened. And it super made this first encounter way harder than it needed to be. But before that, and after making a poor impression on the town. We decided we needed to go outfit ourselves. And I think we all used the suggested loadouts of items that the book suggested for the base classes, because we didn't really know if that was a good thing or not. And then we all used level one cards for the first scenario and then branched out with the X cards after that, just to kind of get used to everything.
Did
anybody feel like these suggested item cards were a mistake, or any that were absolutely spot on for your class?
Oh yeah,
I mean, I ended up changing maybe one or two cards after the first encounter, and that was really optional to my play style. Like, I didn't have to do it.
Yeah, I think mine was the same way with the poison dagger, because we brought out the rats so often. They dealt all the poison. I never needed to do it.
Okay. Yeah.
Only call for me.
For my character, the goggles ended up being super useful because you could activate them at the beginning of an attack action, and I have a few like area of effect attacks. So now I'm getting advantage on every single attack action in that sequence, which came in real handy a few times.
For me, definitely. For me, the boots of striding kind of makes the class. Like, if you're playing brute without the boots of striding, I don't know how you're playing brute, because so it adds two movement to one of your moves once per long rest, which may not sound like a lot, but I've got so many cards that rely on movement. I've got jumps, and like I've got jump movements, and now those jump movements are too longer and it puts me in better position. I've got a card that kind of lets me jump through enemies, and I deal attacks to all of them I jump through, and now that's longer. I can target more enemies. Just the mobility this class seems to require, that two extra movement comes in handy so often. I've got another card that does attack X, where X is the number of hexes I moved that turn. So lots of reasons you want to move extra, and I would not leave home without that item ever.
Word. Brute boots.
So we got all kitted out, and we're in town. The story here is we're in town, and this lady, this very wealthy appearing lady, Jexera, comes in and asks us for her help. She had had some items stolen from her, some valuable texts that she was needing to recover by some bandits, and she was hiring us to go out and retrieve them. And we're a tough group of individuals. We can go out there. We need some money, so it sounds like a good thing. So we head out on the road to the Black Barrow. Scenario number one. And we have a little bit of a road event on the way. And again, we probably shouldn't have had this road event. Whoops. But anyway, so some highwaymen decide they want to rob us. Well, first of all, the joke's on them because none of us have any money left. We just bought our starting gear.
It takes your full amount of starting gold to buy your starting gear, you know?
Yeah. But beyond that, we're adventurers. Nobody's screwing with us.
No.
Especially not highwaymen. We know what happens when highwaymen get involved with adventurers.
Well, now we do.
So we stand up to these guys. And then we kind of get beat up a little bit, and we all start the first scenario we've ever played, down 3 health and poisoned.
It was beautiful.
Yeah.
I will point out that was not a tactical decision that I suggested. Just
that one was not. We'll get to your tactical decisions in future episodes.
That will become a theme later, just heads up. That one was not on me that time.
No. Starting off, things great. Now, to the party's credit, particularly to Steve's credit, his quattrel, Tinkerer, took care of most, at least the poison part, really early into the first turn.
Yeah, because we could start next to each other, and I had that adjacent heal card.
Yeah.
Yep.
So we healed up pretty quick, and then we had a room full of bandits to beat up, and boy, did we beat those bandits up. They didn't see it coming. We're feeling real good about ourselves after that first room, guys. Then I decided to kick open the door.
Well, I mean,
it looked good when you did it, though.
Of course you're going to kick open the door. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my job. I'm the brute. I kick open doors with my brute boots.
With a surprising level of finesse, I'll add.
Yes, sir. Then I go barreling into the room, and I go barreling into the room for good reason. I've got a push attack, and I can reach a dude, and I can hit him with that attack, and then I can push him into a trap. And I do. And it's so good. And this dude takes so much damage. I just kicked in that door with style and pizzazz and let them know what's up. Unfortunately, everybody else was still in the room behind me. And then the 6 guys in the room got to go. And then they got to go again. Because I'd kind of used all my cards and kind of needed to rest.
Yeah.
And then I had to discard a bunch of cards. And then I was unconscious in the corner.
It's a strong start.
That's, yeah. Yep.
So I fear we missed a very important part here, and that was Steve's tactical trap laying, really making sure that no one sneaks up on us, you know.
Yeah, yes. that happened in room one. We'd taken care of the bad guys in front of us, and so Steve...
Well, okay, let me point out, I planted that trap with the intent to use the hook gun to pull something into it, and then you guys just killed that thing, and we walked away from the trap.
This is true.
So it wasn't entirely just like throwing down traps carelessly. There was a plan that just didn't pan out.
To be fair, though, it was about 2 hexes from the back wall of the whole complex.
I mean, yes, but I also didn't fully understand the whole lost card and other stuff. It was the first round. Apparently. And other excuses, whatever you guys want to pick.
Excellent. However, that blunder has nothing to do, or nothing, can't lay a finger on my now unconscious brutes.
Right, like you took over.
Decision making.
You took center stage for this.
I did. And then... Garrett decided to take center stage with his spell weaver because now I'm unconscious. That's not good for you guys, but Garrett's got a plan, especially to deal with these archers in the back of this room.
Yeah, and you know, it's a brilliant plan. I'm looking at that. I've got some really great like burst AoE I can do. So I can go in, I can blow out the dudes in the back. That's taken out the range. So then my other two guys can breach the door and then, you know, bing, bang, boom, room is clear. Super easy. So I bust in there and I'm getting ready to attack. I lay my attack down. It goes okay. I think I missed one, but it goes okay. And then the rest of the brilliant plan was I'm going to pop my invisibility cloak, right? And then they're not going to be able to attack me because I'm invisible. And then my next turn will come around. I'll finish him off. Our tinkerer had a different plan.
I mean, yes. I mean, this is the first example of his tactical genius.
Yes.
Where he passively suggested that perhaps... Given how our tank died kicking in a door, maybe we wanted to keep that cloak for opening a door later.
Right, which, you know, that
he did not. He did not hold a sword to your throat, just throwing that out there.
Yeah. Well, and I was also in a position where the skeleton archers around me were kind of going to have to fire at disadvantage. So I felt pretty confident that I could, you know, take care of whatever was coming next. I couldn't.
What did come next?
Arrows. Multiple arrows.
All of them.
Yeah, and the spell weaver starts off with, I believe, 7 hit points. So it doesn't take many arrows to make me fall asleep, which is also a recurring theme.
Yes.
So now I'm dead in the hallway. There's skeletons looming over my body. Casey, well, we're not dead. Casey's unconscious in the hallway. We're feeling awesome. And our other two guys, I don't think I've even bothered coming in the room yet. And then I see...
I think we're at the door, yeah.
I see the hero of heroes on the horizon. I see my savior in the form of a nest of rats.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if the tank can't tank, the rats may as well.
Yes.
Yeah. I believe with the decoy and the rats were moving in at this point together.
I can't remember if the rats got cast before or after, like once that room opened up or not, but they have such a slow movement. It took them a while to get there. But yeah, oddly enough, everything wanted to miss them. It was just the weirdest coincidence.
Well, they're short. It's just swinging over their heads. Yeah.
Right? And they do have good health. So as you like to refer to it as, you know, 6 health, there's a bunch of rats, so each time you lose one, you lose some rats. Well, you know, they can take the beating for a little bit, but they kept missing, and they would go in and they would either throw the crit or they would get the +1 or even +2, and they would do quite a bit more damage than I was doing because I was so new at this, and they were effectively AI at this point, or I guess always, and it was just working out really well.
They were kicking ass. they cleared that room.
I couldn't have.
They did.
Had better rats.
And then, so
you guys,
yeah, we cleared the second room, but we're down our 2 heavy hitters.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. You're getting low on cards and there's still a whole door to kick open.
Yep. We have some rats, an inflatable punch dummy. Not confident. I'm not confident about this third room.
Attack, right?
None of us just takes hit.
Yeah. He just runs up and stands there to get punched in the face.
Which is kind of what I do.
Which is also a recurring theme, that poor summon, man. He's got a rough life ahead of him. Anyway, we all put our heads together and come up with, I think, a pretty ingenious plan for how to succeed in the final room.
We cheat!
We cheated! We cheat
a little bit. Just a little bit.
I think it's only fair from the misdrawn road event.
Yeah.
kind of evened out.
So our logic was this. Like, we first of all, it's a co-op game, so you play to have fun, right? I don't think any of us thought it would be fun to, like, we just spent, like, 2 hours figuring this game out and getting in here and getting this scenario set up and playing through it, and we don't really want to play through this one again, especially with it just being the first one and we're learning and blah, 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 blah. So we were going to lose. Like, it's inevitable. Like, there's no way these two guys are going to get through this last room, because there's four players worth of enemies in that room. So we decided before we opened this last door, we would spawn that room like it was a two-player room, which is still no guarantee of success because there's only two people up, and it was still nail-biting.
They were, yeah, they were.
But that's what we did. So we spawned a few.
Like, that was still a factor.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we were still down a few. We spawned a few less people in there than we would have normally, but it was still a challenge, and we still had to kind of earn it in that sense. But we did kind of fudge the rules there a little bit just for the sake of getting through scenario one with a little bit of a success under our belts. I will also say that we did go back and take the easy difficulties level worth of experience at the end, so we didn't cheese it too hard.
And this is
we counter-cheesed as much as we could.
Yeah, that is not a recurring theme. That was just, you know, mistakes were made the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So going forward, we are totally cool with losing where appropriate, where we earn it. But this time we decided just to give ourselves a little bit of a break. This was our one minor mulligan.
And also not opening doors and blasting in.
We learned that lesson real quick.
There was a few lessons we learned on that first mission.
So anyway, cheesed it a little bit, but got through. Got through feeling okay about ourselves. I feel like we all felt a lot better about our class after that first scenario.
Yeah.
Than we did beforehand. Like, we had a much better feel for the character.
What was the goal on that first scenario again? Was that kill everything or get the chest in the back?
It was just kill everything. We did get the chest in the back, which got us a nice side event, which we will visit in the next episode. So after this first scenario, I guess, what were everybody's impressions of the game itself, having gotten a couple hours in on it?
Well, I've been going through withdrawal symptoms every week, so yeah.
Yeah, I was instantly hooked on this game. It is incredibly easy for how complicated, you know, it is. You've got a very simple set of instructions, and you've got a very simple loop, you know, and it all comes down to just how you play. And I fell in love immediately. I've actually bought myself a copy of it now, and I'm going to be playing through it with my wife and daughter at home. Because doing two Gloomhavens at a time, I'm still not sure that's enough Gloomhaven. Like, it's just that good, you know?
But the point you bring up about it, having a lot of systems but very simple, is a good one, because they've done a really good job of sort of delegating the complex rules into specific cards or events as they happen.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you don't have to memorize, like, a bunch of crazy stuff for it. The event card will tell you how to deal with something. Boss cards, when we come across them, have specific instructions on them.
I feel the same way with all of it. The cards, they work really well with each character class. The only thing I might have a problem with is the element. And it's not that they're an awful mechanic. It's the problem is you can forget them quite regularly, because especially at the early levels, we're not generating the elements quite as regular as we probably could later. Mm. And the thing is, you're supposed to decrement them every turn, and we just might forget them constantly. And then I'm looking like, can I use that now? And I always just assume I can, and then we kind of backpedal and say no, it's gone, or go ahead and use it, and that might not be a valid play at that point. That's my only kind of beef with it. A better way to do that one.
I would agree with that as well. It's like one step too far on the upkeep almost. You have to remember it, and a lot of the times, if you generate the element, you're the one using it, right? We haven't really had instances, very many, where I generate an element for somebody else, so I don't know. It just seems like there maybe could have been a simpler way to, like, maybe I empower myself for the next turn, and that means something, right? And a couple of cards can use that or whatever. But at the end of the day, it's a pretty small system. And thematically, it's kind of interesting. You're generating these fire elements in the world by doing, you know, and so that's kind of cool.
Another part would be like the whole table talk, because I never really wanted to straight up ask, hey, are you going to create a frost or a fire or whatever, because I didn't know if that was legal, and I kept asking that, I'm sure, over and over, like, you gonna do anything useful with elements this turn, you know, try to get around
Oh, go ahead, Casey.
I feel like that's fair game as far as talking about elements, because, like, you're generating, like, those changes in the world you can be expecting. Really, it's just like, you know, exactly how much damage are you doing or what initiative number are you going on.
Right.
And there's actually, there are alternate rules where you can play with an open table. They just recommend you go, you increase difficulty by a level to make up for it.
Oh, wow.
Now, see, that is something, and maybe I'm skipping ahead a little bit here, but initially did not bother me about the game. But I kind of broke down during our last session with in regards to the initiative system. You know, because you're sitting there, well, I'm going to be going moderately to somewhat severely quickly and a bit on the slow side. And like you're just circle jerking that every single turn. And it didn't bother me.
I was going to,
you know, like five or sessions in, I was just like, oh, my God, just what? Tell me the number, you know.
Now, to be fair, though, we had a situation the other day where we were trying to figure it out, and like the timing was very important. Steve needed to go, then I needed to go, but I needed to go after Steve, but I needed to go before the monsters.
Right.
And we're having this discussion, and we thought we were on the same page, and then Steve flips over
a little faster than you expected, like
17, and I'm like, Steve, that is not moderately fast in the slightest. That's just fast. Like, I was like 20 numbers off from what I thought. So it's still, there's still some interesting stuff that comes out of that, I think.
I know what Toss is talking about with that, though, too. And I think we could get around that with the argument that, like, the longer a team's been together, the more they're used to each other's speed. So if you wanted to just straight up say initiative numbers, I don't think it's cheesing it that bad.
Because
I mean, after a while, we kind of developed a shorthand anyways, where it's like, we know everybody's speeds. So Skip's saying, you know, I'm going as fast as I can. We know that means, what is it, an 8?
Yeah, 8 to 12.
Yeah. So
my bigger problem with initiative is just tracking it within the turn. Okay, I'm on a 34. Is anybody before 34? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, one of these five monsters is. Okay, it's all right, cool. All right, who's up next? You know, we don't have, and maybe we could do some extra side work to track that better, but
it's going to be about the same amount of work no matter how we decide to track it. It's not terrible, definitely, but yeah, at least a few times a turn, I'm like, all right, so 32, anyone know? Okay, I'm going to go ahead and go. You know, that's kind of a common sentence we have to do.
Yeah. And when you're dealing with multiple enemy types, you can have up to, what, 8 different initiatives we have to track?
Yeah.
But, I mean, those are all minor gripes on a game that we're having a fantastic amount of fun with. And I've got to say, so I got that unique experience, and I guess, Garrett, you'll get this too whenever yours comes in. And, like, I knew, like, I'd heard that the game was big. I'd heard it weighs, like, 23 pounds and all this stuff. But then I get it in the mail, and the box is sitting on my front porch, and it's like, I know this is my board game, and that box is enormous, right? And then, like, opening that whole thing up and just seeing how big it is and comparing it to the other board games I have in my closet, and it's like, this is ridiculous. And then you open it up, and it's just chock full of components. You're sorting through them all. I spent over an hour punching cardboard that first night I got it. It's just, it's a really cool experience just seeing what all was involved with the game.
There's, like, a Team Lift sticker on the side of the UPS box, right? Like, it's ridiculous.
That being said, all that cool content has to be stored and sorted.
Yeah.
And I felt like I did an okay job of sorting most of it with baggies and things like that. But then, like, even after the first game, this setup is just too slow. And, like, digging through a baggie full of monsters every time we got to swap them out is just not going to work, especially if we're going to play more than one scenario in a session. So, and I'll talk about it more in the next episode, but I had to get a little bit creative and find better stored solutions, because what's in the box for a lot of the player stuff, like the character cards and the minis and the health dials and all that stuff, is well done, but it's all the extra pieces that you use to build out the map and the creatures and stuff need a lot of help.
Yeah, you definitely, we'll get into the organization aspect, and I've actually learned some lessons from your organization. I'm going to try to do things a little different. What's nice, though, is my wife is actually diagnosed OCD, so I plan on just punching it all out and walking away, and when I come back, it's going to be amazing, you know?
This might be a good time to mention, Casey, I don't know yours versus the one Tots got. The cardboard with the glue that we're running into.
Yeah,
so I'm having some cardboard. Some of the cardboard pieces are, it's weird because, like, it's almost like there's a center solid piece of cardboard, and then the images are a thinner piece of cardboard that are kind of glued onto the outsides, is the best way I could describe it. And some of those outsides are falling off on one side, and so there's a lot of, like, having to glue them back on, which isn't a huge deal. It's just annoying when I'm trying to set this up and then that tile falls apart and now I've got to find a glue stick.
But like you said, it's like there's
they should have a Gloomhaven stick that they sell with it.
So I regret letting you finish that. But like you said, there's like two different kinds of cardboard. It's a very clean separation, like 2 seconds with a glue stick and it's back together. It's not like mushing apart or anything like that. So that is a bonus, right. It's, you know.
Yeah, it's just a little annoying.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Anyway, that is scenario number one for the party poopers. And I hope now you see why we are titling this podcast Misadventures, because that's going to be another recurring theme. Things don't always go cleanly in the Gloomhaven universe.
We'll let you know when they actually do.
Yeah. So anyway, guys, thanks for joining us. And hopefully you'll swing back by next time when we finish up this whole Black Barrow scenario and hopefully bring Jexra back her goods. And then we go and meet the most annoying golem in the world.
And guys, this is part of our Gamer Public Radio podcast series. We have another one titled Gamer Public Radio. You can get all that information at GamerPublicRadio.com. If you want to tweet us about this podcast, you can tweet us at GPub Radio. Make sure you leave a review on iTunes. That helps us a whole lot with discoverability. Thank you to the guys in the Gloomhaven subreddit who suggested we started recording this. We want your suggestions. I know, you know, there might be a few opinionated people in the Gloomhaven community, I've heard. So we could definitely use those opinions. Tell us how to improve, and we will get to that. We want to make the podcast you want to hear, so help us out.
Thanks, guys. You've been listening to Misadventures, a Gloomhaven podcast brought to you by Gamer Public Radio. Please join us every Friday for new episodes at misadventurespodcast.com or find us on your podcast application of choice. Music for this podcast is provided by Kevin McLeod. For more of Kevin's work, please check out incompetech.com. See you next time.